This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. Season 11, Women of Letters. I'm Jules from the Super Wiki. I'm here with Amy, of course, from Sweet on Dean, and we're here to amp you up, arc you up, and get you ready for Season 11 of Supernatural. Woo!
Woo! I was just doing little seal claps. Yes, very, very, very excited. I did my little preview piece today and got stupidly excited while watching all the various promos and clips. And the more I talked about it, the more excited I got. I was like, I'm going to be absolutely ridiculously hyped come Thursday, which of course it is for us when the show's on, because we're in Australia.
We live in your future and sometimes in your past. I'm never quite sure.
Yes.
So on today's podcast, we're going to do a few things. We're going to look back because we've both had the Blu-rays of Season 10 in our hot little hands. So we're going to look back a little bit over Season 10 and particularly at some of the great features on the Season 10 Blu-ray. Maybe why you should go and purchase the Season 10 Blu-ray. We get no commission from pimping them.
No, but they wish we did.
We'll give you plenty of notice before we get into talking Season 11 and some spoilers, because we are going to talk spoilers. Not that there are that many, but if you're a real, real spoiler phobe, you might want to turn off. Season 11's happening, and that's probably all you want to know. But we'll talk a bit about what is coming up, what we know, what we guess, what we hope for, and then you can listen back in a week's time and find out how wrong we were about everything.
Yep.
What I wanted to start today, because a little thing happened today on the interwebs that was both enraging and delightful all in one.
It was pretty delightful.
So for those of you who were absent from the interwebs on what was Sunday the 4th or Monday the 5th of October in other countries, there was a article posted on Spoiler TV, which is a website that has mainly posts spoilers, funnily enough, given the name. And someone had written someone who I don't know, Omar Bin was the handle. Do not know who this person is or even their gender, but they had posted what ratings various CW shows might expect in the upcoming season, which is quite an interesting topic to look at. There's been a few of these sort of posts on various media sites and blogs around at the moment, you know, what's
going to be a hit, what's not going to be a hit.
A lot of the main networks have started their full season programming already, so there's been lots of pilots and new shows starting, so that looked quite interesting. But, however, it under the post about Supernatural, it included, and I'll actually read verbatim what it said, so it had sort of what Supernatural's time slot is, what leads into it, which is Arrow, what's up against it on other TV stations. And I know there's been a lot of talk because it's actually up against Empire, which, of course, is a bit of a juggernaut at the moment. It's had two episodes already and is huge, although I don't sort of see it as competition. Not saying people don't watch both. I do. But
I haven't watched Empire. It's one I keep
watching. Oh, it's delightful.
So many shows that I need to watch. But I wouldn't put that in the up against category. In a way, I mean, I know it's a very big show, but you know what I mean? I feel like they're probably
I don't think
marketed differently.
Yeah, and look, as you know, we could have a whole discussion about how, you know, the landscape of ratings has changed over the last few years. First of all, with time shifting, so people who tape shows either because they're watching a show on another channel, or even just because you can have a life, you don't have to be wedded to when the show's aired, and so you often will get now the ratings for the night's viewing, and then time shifted for both one day, 24 hours plus. And 7 days plus, yep. Because, you know, sometimes people wait till the weekend or whatever night they've got free to catch up on their shows. So anyway, you should all watch Empire. It is delightful and wonderful, and it's part of this return genre to sort of the evening melodrama, harking back to sort of the 80s of Dallas and Dynasty. So, but really amazingly good stuff and a hoot. Anyway. That aside, the article looked at, you know, where Supernatural was on, and the summary had these lines, opened with these lines. Here's my thoughts on the show, from the author of the article. I think it has a super dedicated, loyal male audience that tends to stick with it regardless of where it moves. The female audience, that one seems to be much more casual driven. And it goes on to talk about what that means, despite contradicting what it says, because it actually says when it was up against S.H.I.E.L.D., which it characterised as a show with a strong male following, it said Supernatural lost viewers, which would, anyway. Numbers aside, the characterising the female audience of Supernatural as being more casual driven and the super dedicated loyal male audience was, frankly, a load of misogynistic bullshit. Now, I know...
And baffling, quite.
Baffling. And now, I know people do find it strange, but, I mean, numbers over the years have shown that while slightly female-dominated, Supernatural does have has a large male audience, slightly less than the female audience, but there's always had that. That's not in dispute here. However, to characterise what is, you know, anyone with an access to the internet would know is one of the most, if not the most, of course we always think we're the most, passionate, dedicated fandom in the world as casual viewers. Was beyond the pale and led to a wonderful hashtag on Twitter, casual female viewer, where many, many fans posted evidence of their dedication to Supernatural, followed by the hashtag casual female viewer. Amy, you loved the hashtag, didn't you?
I got into the hashtag. I loved the hashtag. I joined in with talking about my tattoos and how casual viewer made me becoming casual female viewer made me get like, wow, I reckon probably like 70% of my tattoos, and I have 34 themed Supernatural themed in some way or inspired in some way for sure. And yeah, we talked about cons and everybody, and there's even a t-shirt already, and it was pretty fun. It was, you know, some people were quite outraged. I must admit, I sort of jumped in feeling fairly amused by someone actually saying that and thinking, oh my God, that person's obviously not done their research, and found that amusing, and I kind of enjoyed it. But there were some quite enraged people as well
It ties into a long history of diminishing and trivialising women's engagement. Mm-hmm. You know, women aren't real fans, the whole fake geek girl trope that's been around for a number of years, that in some ways, you know, our engagement with the show is lesser, we're not real fans, whatever. So, you know, numbers aside, and there were no graphs presented, so, you know, there's that. But numbers aside, to characterise the Supernatural viewership as being divided into a super dedicated loyal male viewers and casual female viewers, yeah, I mean, my first reaction was to post a GIF of Jared laughing a lot. But, you know, it underscores, and I don't know the writer. You know, it's someone blogging on Spoiler TV. I know, it could be anyone. But, you know, it taps into a large larger thing of female fandom being, you know, dismissed, basically.
Yeah.
It's so ludicrous in the case of Supernatural. And as I said, this is not about how many viewers the show of men and women or whoever the show watches the show. This is characterizing our engagement with the show as being casual.
And less than yeah, the male's engagement.
To actually call the male audience loyal and super dedicated, I'm not quite sure what criteria the person was using for that, because, well, as was evidenced by the wonderful hashtag, and very ironically running at the same time as the first Supernatural art show on Twitter, which had well over 600 posts of fan art, probably about 99% by women.
Mm.
Hello to Fanboy 30 who posted.
Yeah, I saw Fanboy 30s.
And oh, my friend, I can't remember, HR Zone, who does the wonderful Supernatural sculptures. But basically 99% female. And, you know, many people, of course, cited the conventions. As I said, you know, oh, it's not like the show commemorated its 200th episode by celebrating casual female viewers, is it? Oh, yes, it is. And has celebrated female fans since very early in its run. Anyway, and Amy, of course, we did trend, didn't we?
We did. Well, at least in Australia, we trended.
Because we're so super dedicated, even though it was in the middle of the work day.
Well, it was a public holiday for me.
Oh, okay, maybe it was the Sydney people then, but it was people in my state were working, but I think we were still tweeting as well. We had Brianna Buckmaster and Kim Rhodes join in.
Even though we don't think they quite knew what they were tweeting for.
Oh, but, you know.
They were supporting
female,
us.
Female fan rock. Which just goes to show, you know, the cast supports us. I was reminded of a moment at the New Jersey Con, which has been gift many times, when Jared was doing his what is now a regular thing about asking how many cons people have been to, whose first time it is, and he sort of went, who's been to more than, you know, 5 cons, 10 cons, I think he said 30 cons, and our friend Krista had obviously indicated that she was in that subset, and Jensen had just roared laughing and said, you go, girl, we know you, we love you, you just own it. Which I think is probably enough said on the topic of how casual we are not.
Yes, but it was very fun. So you can always go back and have a look at that hashtag, because some of it was pretty damn funny.
It was, it was, and it was a lovely celebration of our fandom.
It was.
It was everything from pictures of tattoos and art and
stories of
people
going,
you know,
to the
I took my 3-year-old kid to a convention. You know, it was
exactly. It was actually. It was a good celebration.
It was. It was rather delightful.
It was.
We're good like that, even though we're very casual. Which became a sort of a tag to everything. We're casually podcasting, right?
Yeah, we're very,
very
casual about
very
it.
Very casually. So I actually have pants on, which is unusual for me, but I do have pants on today.
I'm very impressed.
So that's quite formal for me, really.
It's quite formal. I'm in my pajamas, so just, you know, just so you know.
Oh, lucky you. Anyway, we're going to casually now speak about the season 10, and in particular, why you should rush out and buy the Blu-ray.
Oh, it's pretty, that's why.
Tell us how pretty it is, Amy.
It's really, really pretty. I mean, it is gorgeous. It was interesting because I watched it, the first time I put it on, I watched it in my room, which I don't have the full HD TV in. Just I've got a Blu-ray, but it's not all hooked up full HD. And then I put it on in the lounge room, which is, you know, the full system. And I was like, oh, my God, the difference. It's just so clean.
Isn't it? It looks like another show.
It's so beautiful. It's just, yeah, it is. It's crystal clear, but in, like, a really nice way, not, like, really harsh or anything. Just everything really pops. Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, sometimes you get a Blu-ray and you kind of go, meh, you know,
Meh.
you can't really notice. And then sometimes you get one, and it's this particular Blu-ray, Supernatural, this season 10 one, I really noticed how gorgeous it was. So if you can get the Blu-ray, I do recommend it. It is
Yep.
pretty awesome.
And things like the special effects are like a million times better.
Really gorgeous.
Oh, like the depth that you get in things and detail, like particularly remember when Sam thinks he's got one up on Crowley and and then Crowley's eyes turn red and the smoke starts coming out. I mean, that looked like compared to the Blu-ray compared to what I saw from TV was like, MS Paint versus Photoshop,
Totally, the
it was
smoking
amazing.
eyes were amazing.
Yes. And things like that. And
And the
a lot
green
of,
smoke in the Weather Project,
oh.
was, like it. I always thought that looked amazing, but on the Blu-ray, I was like, oh my God, it's like it's alive. It was
Yeah.
just
And the
glorious.
darkness, at the end
Yeah.
and a lot of, everything else in between,
Because I mean,
looked.
remembering that the show is all shot in HD, so
Yes.
this is its natural format, is
Yes. Well, and a couple
shot
of the
and
guys
produced.
from the VFX team said, this is what it's meant to look like. This is how we wish everyone can see it every week. And I know that it gets, depending on where you're watching it, it's broadcast in a lot of different definitions.
And compressed, it'll be
Yeah.
probably like down. Could well be. I'm talking truth here. It could well be down res, then up res, back up again, which often happens. So, compressed as it goes out on whatever you're seeing it through. So, what you see on TV has gone through a lot of different things to get to you, and it's yeah. So, it is definitely worth it. It's incredibly pretty,
It is.
even the
And
menu.
even the menu, and I love, but even I love the fact they've kept the same style of the menu really over the whole 10 years of
And even
using.
the DVD, I love that the back of the DVDs are all pretty much
Oh,
identical.
yeah. If you're a have that sort of obsessive collectorism, it probably makes you feel good that there's a consistency, even though the containers have got thinner.
Yes, they have, definitely. Definitely got less.
That's a thing, isn't it?
Which
Yeah,
is kind of good.
they're not as thick as they used to be.
No, they're not.
And one thing I've always admired Supernatural for, particularly because it's a little show on I was going to say on the WB. Oh God! oh, suddenly having some flashback there on the CW. It's always had really good value extras on it in terms of. Look, it's gone up and down as depending on how many commentaries it's had, but they've always had specially made features, usually around the mythology and that. And I mean, I love that, and I
Yeah,
really
I do too.
appreciate the work that goes into it. So I thought we might go through just to further tell you why you should go and buy the at least the DVD, if not the Blu-ray. What you get extra on this. So we might start with the commentaries. So there's three commentaries on this. The first one is The Hunter Games,
Yep.
that's with Curtis Armstrong, John Badham, and the writers Eugenie Ross Lemming and Brad Buckner, and that's their
Yep.
first time doing a commentary. What did you think of that one?
I always love all the commentaries because you just always get little extras that you just knew
Nuggets.
nothing about, little nuggets. So I always enjoyed them. I always enjoy every single one of them.
Yeah, I love this one. It was lovely having Curtis on there because
Yeah, that was a treat.
I adore Curtis. And it was
And he's
interesting
got
having.
such an amazing energy. He's so
Oh.
excitable and interesting guy.
And of course, having the wonderful John Badham, who's like
Legendary.
legendary, and we're so lucky to have had him come to Supernatural. I think he's directing three episodes this season.
We're so lucky to have him. That's just in crazy
I
town.
know. And then the first time hearing Eugenie and Brad on a DVD on a commentary.
And I
So,
mean, they've been with the show for a very long time,
well,
on and
yes,
off.
on and off. Yes, they were around in season one and then came back in she says off the top of her head, season 7 she's right.
Yes. Ah! I was going to say 6 or 7.
I should run a wiki. anyway, so that was a good one. The next one is there's No Place Like Home with Felicia, Robbie Thompson and Phil Segrisha. That's delightful. So that's the one that's where Felicia comes back and is the evil Charlie and the good Charlie.
Yeah, that was a very fun one.
That was fun and insightful and really, really worth watching. And then we have the Executioner song with
which is just was so awesome.
You should just listen to that forever.
For Tim.
It's brilliant.
Tim's just so awesome. Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant, and he's just so lovely, entertaining, and he does all these voices, and yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that. I think I watched that one first. I was like, have to watch that.
And actually, one of my favourite episodes for the season.
Mine too.
Have to say, I love Bob Behrens' work, but I have to say that might be my favourite episode of his. I think
that was wonderful. It's absolutely one of my favourite of the season, and I'd agree with you. One of my favourite of Bob Behrens as well. It was amazing.
Yeah, it. I mean, that whole opening at the prison.
The teaser is great.
I mean, that's you know, filmic quality right there. And Kane walking along
it's beautiful.
The prison cells. Wonderful deleted scene from that, which was cut, unfortunately for time, of the fat security guard on the Segway. Have you seen that one?
Oh, I must have. I've watched them all. I must have seen that.
So Dean's in the car and you see this belly appear.
That's right.
And then later on as Dean's walking into the prison, the guy goes past.
That's right.
Again, yeah. Which, look, the deleted scenes, it's always interesting to see, and obviously this isn't all the deleted scenes, but it's nice to get a glimpse of what they couldn't fit in for time or various other reasons. Unfortunately, no grilled cheese sandwich.
No grilled cheese.
Deleted scene.
And no Dean working out.
And no Dean working out. We may remember there was a great fandom wank over the fact that we found out that there had been footage of Sam actually making Dean a grilled cheese sandwich, which had been cut. And we only got to see him deliver the grilled cheese sandwich, thus furthering Sam Erasure within the narrative.
And they continued it on the DVD by not including it in the missing scenes.
Well, Easter egg in there somewhere. I keep putting the DVD in and randomly
pop up
cursor over everything. In the hope
because there's actually no Easter eggs on it, is there?
There hasn't been for a number of years. I think I looked up
the
on
the one that was had it. It was a Blu-ray I know that I had that had it. I can't remember what season it was now.
It's actually a long time ago. They haven't really done. At one point, some of the deleted scenes would be put on as Easter eggs. And then earlier on they had other like little interviews and that, but not since the first few seasons. Now they actually just tell you where things are.
Yeah.
Which I'm partly grateful for.
Yeah, I quite like it because I get really frustrated.
But it would be nice to, you know, 6 months from now, discover something was on there.
Yeah.
And then we have the actual special features. So the first one is a very special Supernatural special, and that actually aired before the beginning, if people remember back, before season 10. So the week before the premiere, they had sort of a look back over Supernatural, interviewing everyone, you know, a lot of people involved with the show. And sort of just a snippet of looking back over.
Yeah, and going through different sort of aspects of the show and looking at them individually. Oh, so it's a really cool little special.
So we've got that again. The behind the scenes on the 200th episode.
Is that the staging of the 200th?
Yes.
That was great. How fun was that to watch?
And how amazing, like, again, there's so
watching the music and, you know, development and all that kind of thing.
And, you know, thank goodness they actually thought to film a lot of that, which, you know, they had to think to do that at the time, filming the rehearsals and in the school where they actually, you know, filmed the most of the episode. But I was so blown away by, again, we don't think when we're watching the final thing, what a different challenge, a different challenges mm-hmm. that came out of this episode, because, you know, they were filming this musical and they were doing something so different than what they normally do week to week, and everything from actually, you know, all the whole writing and production of it, but actually having to record the singing and then all those aspects of it, I think, were just fascinating to see, and to think of what an additional challenge that was.
Yeah, because like they were saying, you know, that they don't put on stage productions. That's not their job. That's not what they'll do. They do, and it's really interesting to see that they had to think about the actual working stage as well as the, you know, the shooting that as as in
it
part
really
of an
was
episode,
a show within a show.
Yeah, yeah.
And that yes, they had to film this High School Musical and choreograph
which had to function properly. Everything had to work.
Yeah, and all the moving parts for that, with a whole lot of new actors, obviously people who they hadn't worked with before, and then the normal, you know, sort of monster parts of the show as well. So
quite a challenge. Just when you watch that little documentary, you realise what a challenge it must have been, what a thing to take on. And they all kind of come across as like, we didn't really realize what a massive thing it was going to be until we actually got into it and went, oh, my God, what are we doing?
There were some lovely little stories in it, though, like how Phil Segrisha took all the girls who were part of the High School Musical, you know, took them out to lunch, gave them little presents, and then said, I'm going now, you go, all
get
go
to know each other. Yeah, that's cool.
Really nice little things like that, I thought, were you know, it just, again, gave you this insight into things we only get snippets of, which is how, you know, day to day and episode to episode, this crew makes this show happen in such an amazing way. And wonderful, everyone had such wonderful things to say about all the actors who were in that episode, who did such an incredible job.
Amazing voices. And
Yeah. I still find it hard to watch, though, in terms of that a cappella Carry On My Wayward Son. It gets me every time.
It makes you, oh, I love that episode. I've watched that so many times.
Yeah.
I watched it on the plane going to the Dallas Con. I'm like, I want to watch the episode. I just, it's on my phone, so I can just kind of randomly watch it if I want to enjoy it.
It's amazing. It gives me many feels. So. Mm. Damn you, Robbie Thompson. Robbie features on a couple of interviews on this, and I have to say I decided that, you know how we tagged Dean as wearing his red murder shirt?
Yes.
Robbie wears his purple meta shirt. I decided that's what it should be called.
The meta shirt. The awesome. Meta shirt. Well, what's Carver's check shirt then? Because he always wears that damn check shirt.
I don't know.
The spoiler-less shirt. When he's not going to give us any spoilers, he wears the check shirt.
Yeah, it's like the anti-Kripke shirt. Because Kripke was always bursting to tell us everything. And Jeremy's always like, oh, I'm not going to tell you a thing. There's another mythology-based special feature around really the myth arc in season 10 around the mark of Cain and the blade, the first blade. And again, I really like that because it gives you that chance to sit back and think about the arc of the whole season.
I really enjoy it when they do these pieces on the different mythologies that they look at in the season, and they often do a little mini documentary on each specific mythology, and I always really enjoy them because they do go into a lot of religious background and stuff as well, and they, which, you know, I mean, the show it's got so much religious stuff in it, and they often have, you know, religious experts and talking about the mythology in the, you know, the real books and things like that outside of, in the real text, outside of what
the
supernatural world expands.
Particularly did that. This one is more people from the show, but again, you know, one of the things I love about doing rewatches is, you know, week to week when it's on TV, it's a roller coaster ride because you don't know what's coming next. You don't know where it's going. Once you've seen the whole season and then you rewatch it, you get to see the craft of how the story was unfolding. The seeds that were laid early that you don't notice on first watching because they don't make sense until you know what they're foreshadowing or
you're
whatever.
Kind of not in that state of panic that you are. But that's true, though. Like, you spend half the time when you're watching a new episode in kind of this high level of anxiety that you don't have when you're doing a rewatch. So I think you tend to notice more because you're not like on the edge of your seat wondering what horror is going to befall all the people that we adore. And and so I find that I take a lot more in often on the rewatches when I and I'm not just talking about rewatching an episode, you know, after it's gone to air, and we usually watch it, you know, half a dozen times or whatever after before the next one starts. But actually, like watching like six or seven in a row, and you really do get to feel the beautiful arc growing, and you do see little things along the way that you didn't notice before that point to the next thing. You go, oh man, you know, that's happened then, I didn't notice, and that reflects on what happened down here, but you just didn't pick it up. Well, one, because it happened a long time before the episode and you didn't have that hindsight, but also I think you're watching it in a very different frame of mind week to week than you are when you do a rewatch.
Oh, definitely. And as I agree with what you say about not having that anxiety, and also you're getting to see, you know, those different levels. And every rewatch, I find, and I think Supernatural is a show that rewards every rewatch differently and with something else. Sam Maggs, who used to work on the website Mary Sue, who wrote the Fangirl's Guide to the Galaxy, which is a wonderful book. Anyway, she started watching Supernatural, so she's in season one, and sort of watching along with her hilariously. And that, you know, I keep, you know, even now you keep thinking about things that tie back in, what's happened in season 10 that ties back to season 1, or, you know, those through threads that go through everything, or just even reflecting on, oh my God, you know, where they were then versus where they are now. Mm. And we are so lucky in that this is a show that has progressed in time, in real time, just avoiding the various hundred years in hell here and there, and skipped years and all that. Yeah. But, you know, the characters have aged as the actors aged as well. And that, for me, that gives it an extra grounding, because you look back to the early seasons and, yes, Sam and Dean are younger and look younger and feel younger and sound younger. So the comparison with where they are now feels true as well. So they're not playing the same characters they were, and that, you know, they have grown and everything that's happened has affected them. And I think you get that every time you go back to watch. You can't help but flip back in your head to go, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite a delight, isn't it? I didn't do this season because I ran out of time. This last to latest, I usually watch the entire series, but it's actually getting kind of tricky to do now.
Yeah, it is.
Because there's just so many episodes to get through. It's like, before I was like, I can knock over 5-6 seasons. Now it's like, holy cow, I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to do it.
Yes, I mean, I try and I've got into a habit of sort of doing different seasons, you know, when I have time, or, you know, even during the season. But yes, to do the whole 10 seasons now, even during hiatus, requires some dedication.
It's a real commitment, so, yeah.
And we're obviously just casual viewers. So that effort, are we?
As if we're going to do that.
Now, one of the best things on the DVD is the documentary called Fans.
I absolutely adored this. I cried when I first watched it because I felt like, I really wanted, and I said this to my mum was in hospital at the time. She just had a knee replacement, nothing serious or anything. But I said to her, I'm going to come around with my laptop. We're going to watch it together, which we never did. But I said to her, you know, I really feel like I wanted people in my life who don't get it to watch this special. Yeah. And maybe it would help them understand what it is that I connect with and what it means to me and so many other people, and that it's so much bigger than what they think it is and means so much more to people and to me than what they think, you know. And I still have said to Mum, we must sit down and watch it. And she really wants to. She was like, oh, yeah, I really, really want to do that. But, you know, like, I really felt like it was like I wanted to get everybody I knew in a room and went, watch this now, and then you might get it. Because I really felt like it touched on so much of what we love about fandom and what we, you know, that support system and the passion and, you know, how it helps people come out of their shells and, you know, just everything that we say fandom does and our fandom does for us and we do for each other. I felt like a lot of that was captured in this and it really touched me.
Yeah. So it was written and directed by a guy called Jeff Maynard, who's done a lot of the features on the DVDs. And I think all kudos for him for, you know, in what's a, I don't know, it's 45 minute piece. I think really gets, you know, and for people who haven't listened, in our last podcast, we talked to Mitch Klosterman from the Supernatural fan movie and Hanzi Oppenheimer, who's doing Squee the Fangirl documentary. And, you know, there are many ways to delve into fandom and what being a fan is. So it's interesting to see the different ways. And I think what Jeff did was exactly what you say, looked at what it had brought to someone's life. And I think particularly he looked at how it had helped fans connect with people also outside fandom. So often with either friends or family members, or even just within themselves with something important for themselves. And I thought that was great. I mean, I think Rick Blevins, who's well known in the Impala, fan restored Impala community, and his relationship with his dad
was lovely.
And how that was something, you know, that had, you know, and really built a relationship they'd never had. And his dad was gorgeous.
Oh, his dad was awesome in his overalls. And also the lass whose name I can't remember with the wings from Comic-Con
last year,
who had the wonderful Castiel wings that went straight out. And just like listening to her dad suddenly see her in a whole different way and understand her in a whole different way, and how moved he was by her passion and seeing what that brought to her life and seeing what it brought out of her, and you know, how she came out of herself in those moments. And she's standing up in front of the whole cast of Supernatural, popping her wings up and giving them sass, you know, and he just couldn't believe it. And he's in tears, you know, and saying that he will always remember that those 4 days that they spent together at Comic-Con, because it'll always be important to him. And, as you know, it was super beautiful. I mean, I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
And I think particularly, I mean, there are people out there who do have people in their lives who, and having just talked about the casual female viewer, who don't understand and are often dismissive and of fandom. I mean, and, you know, I think the sad things are, you know, you always hope that people in your life will value what's important to you, whatever it is. So if you want to start, you know, macrameing turtlenecks for ferrets and that's your passion, you would hope that the people in your life go, well, hey, it's not my thing, but I think it's important. But I think often fandom, and often for women, is trivialized, and for men as well. I mean, fanboys get it as well.
I think people would understand more for a lot of people that you would crochet turtle.
Probably.
To be honest.
Yes. So we all, you know, some of us are really lucky. I was actually out a couple of weeks ago and, you know, an acquaintance, someone in the vague outreaches of my social circle was there, and he mentioned something about Supernatural, and I'm like, what do you know about Supernatural? And he's like, all I know is your passion for it. And I'm always really taken aback with, you know, your energy and your passion around Supernatural. That's how I know about Supernatural. And he said, you know, it's something I really admire about you. And I'm like, oh, my God.
And when you find those people, you know, like, it's such a wonderful thing. And I think we've all got – we all have people that do that, you know, and then we have the people that don't, or at least I do. I have the people that do and the people that don't. I mean, I drive to work every day with a girl that I've known for years, but we've only just started working together. We started working together in TV like a bazillion years ago in our first sort of jobs, and then didn't see each other forever, and then we've just started working together again, and she lives around the corner. We drive to work together every day, and of course I pretty much only talk about Supernatural but she freaking loves it, because she actually has started watching the show because she wanted to see why I loved it. She'd never heard of shipping. Now if I say something like, what did I say? We were talking about Lord of the Rings the other day, and we were talking about Legolas and Aragorn, and she goes, I bet you'd ship that. And I was like, I would ship that. And so she's like, I know all this stuff that I never knew before. She knows about fan fiction. All this whole other world has opened up to her. And even though that's absolutely not what she's ever going to be into, she thinks it's amazing, and she loves it, and she loves the passion, and she's like, I'm like, I'm so sorry, I just spent the whole time driving here talking about Jensen Ackles. She goes, it's okay, I love it, you know, and she just really likes the passion. And so sometimes you get really lucky and you find the friends that understand it and really, you know, just support it and are excited for you. And as you say, sort of just think, wow, that's a really wonderful thing to be so passionate about something. And then you have the other friends. I've got both.
I have to say, I'm listening for the second time to the audiobook of Felicia's Day, You're Never Weird on the Internet.
Yep.
Which, have you read it?
I've got the audiobook, but I haven't listened to it yet.
Well,
I've got the book and the audio book.
I've got the book and the audio book. I listened to the audio book first, and I'm now on my second listen because it makes me feel like Felicia Day is my best friend and she's living in my house. and that might be a bit creepy. But, you know, that's
I think she'd
her,
like that.
Her whole story, really. You know, without going into the detail, but she had this sort of strangely isolated homeschooled upbringing, and, you know, finding people on the internet was, you know, who shared her interest in weird things was huge for her. And, you know, it tracks her, you know, through all her growing up and everything, you know, to the point where she's invited to go to conventions, and she's on the stage with, you know, Nathan Fillion and Joss Whedon at Comic-Con and everything, and how that affects how, you know, she relates to fans, because, you know, she how much she values what she still gets out of being a fan. And there's some absolutely gorgeous stories of how she gets all fangirly over people. There's one where I think it was at Comic-Con, and Matt Smith from Doctor Who was there. She walked like 4 miles in the morning to buy a box of donuts so that she'd have something to talk to him about, like give him a donut in the green room. And she did, and he didn't want a donut.
Oh, no.
He thought she was a volunteer or something.
Oh, no.
It's like...
Oh, gosh.
But the fact that she uses her own experience to then say that's why she always, even though she deals with a lot of anxiety and everything in social situations, she always wants to make an interaction with people good, because she knows how connecting with, you know, your own type is so important. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's a long way of saying the fan documentary on the – and the fact that, you know – you know, they, you know, the WB paid to have a documentary about fans on the DVD.
And you know, the cast are in it, and the showrunners are in it, talking about how important fandom is, and, you know, how amazed they are by the creativity of the fandom and the art that they're sent. And, you know, or Jensen just blown away by the fans in Parlo that they used on, you know, in Chicago, and how amazed he was by it. I mean, you know, it's just to hear them all talking with passion about our passion.
Even Bob Singer, who doesn't
even
know
Bob
what
Singer.
The internet is.
I know.
Grumpy old uncle.
Grumpy, I mean, he's very grumpy about it, but he's, you know, begrudgingly appreciative. No, but, it's, you know, it's nice to hear them talk passionately about our passion. And I mean, we're lucky, I think, because we do get exposed to that quite a lot through the conventions, and Jensen and Jared are, you know, always passionate about our passion at conventions.
Mark,
but
Mark Shepherd,
or Mark Shepherd, yeah.
His speech at
most
cons about the power of fandom and our incredible creativity and the connections. And
to have the actual studio put it on the DVD is pretty damn cool.
That's a big thing. And as I say, I all snaps to Jeff Maynard, I think, who did a really excellent job in finding these sort of common threads in the stories. Sandra, who's both an artist and also very famously had designed the chess set, Supernatural chess set, that still sits in the production offices, her story. So he chose a small number of fans that were amazed, and it was nice to have the time too.
I agree.
The Supernatural special that was on at the beginning of season 10 had a very small amount of stuff about fandom, but it was really nice to get to know these people a bit.
It's not packed with like 10 different stories. It's like 4, I think. And it's really got time to get to know these people and get to know their stories and get to understand it and feel a part of it feel it relate back to you, because there is time in telling those stories.
Yeah, I just think they're excellent. It's an excellent documentary, and as you say, if you want someone in your life to have some insight into what being a fan means to people and how important it is, and maybe a little bit of modelling about how good friends or family will value what's important to you, even if they don't understand it. As I said, I think there's a number of examples in this story, and particularly Rick and his dad. I think that's a lovely story of them working on cars together, and how he really built a built a relationship for them, that's the power of Supernatural and being a casual viewer on the show. Jules will drop this eventually, probably in about 2075.
Oh my god.
Of course, there's the gag reel, which leaked ages ago, so we've all seen that a billion trillion times. But natural gag reel is always superior to everyone else's gag reel, isn't it, Amy?
It is, and what I love about it is it's getting dirtier and dirtier as the years go on. Dirtier and dirtier.
What were some of your favourite bits of the gag reel?
Oh, God. That's really hard.
Bits with Jensen Ackles.
Every bit with Jensen Ackles is my favourite bit of everything. I'm trying to think. One of my favourite bits. I can't think.
Always love that I think they've nearly, I'd have to go back and look when they started doing it, but they always have the cast, the crew in it.
I think they started around season 5.
Yeah.
I'm saying season 5.
Okay, we'll have to go back and have a look and find out when that
was. That's my bet.
I love the fact whether it's...
I love it too.
Images, still photos or video. I love the fact that they include their crew in it, because it's like having the fan documentary. It's an indication of how important the crew are to making this show, that they take time out. And I don't think there's many other shows that have a dedicated portion of anything to their crew on their DVD.
Yeah, no, I love that.
Unless
too.
It's a special feature about the something, but
it's fun. You see them all doing their job and having fun and wearing their short shorts and.
Sort of get the idea that the camera crew is naked a lot of the time.
No,
who said recently?
Richard, wasn't it?
So Richard Spade, who's directing the moment. Never worked on a show where the camera crew is naked as much as they are. And
I love that the photo of him had the they all had like their shirts unbuttoned down to their navels and were
wearing nothing
underneath and like wearing heavy gold chains. I was like, what day was it that day?
So it was like
Gigolo day or something.
Hoodies or sweat tops unzipped. sort of pimp gold chains on. Richard's just doing the gun show, which is good enough.
Yeah.
Particularly gorgeous photo that was, and I'm hoping to hear lots of stories about his directing over the.
Oh yes, I mean, by the time he goes to talk on, he'll be. Oh, I wonder if he's I suppose he'll be going down to LA to do the edit at some point, though, wouldn't he? Because he can. But anyway, yes, I can't wait to hear how it all went.
Well, and we'll probably hear more from other people than Richard.
Probably.
Honest. I think we'll be gleaning things from what everyone else says. So, and of course, then we'll just have to wait and see. It's episode 8.
And it sounds super fun.
Yes, story written by Jenny Klein. We won't go into the spoilers just yet, though.
Okay.
Although I want to. I suppose we weren't planning on doing a sort of an episode by episode anything of season 10 in this episode, but
no.
Just any general thoughts from your rewatch, Amy?
My general thoughts was I really loved season 10, and I had thoroughly enjoyed it while I was in it, enmeshed in it, watching it week to week. But watching it on rewatch, I just found the story it rolled out so beautifully. I just thought it was a really strong narrative in season 10, and I just loved it. I loved the shift in the brothers' relationship. I loved how you could see that happening. I loved the kind of the up and down in Dean, as you could see him struggling to hang on to his humanity, and he was up and down and all over the place, and one minute gone and next, and I thought that was really great. I loved the fact that we found out that Crowley had been like tricking us all the way through, and so like right from the get-go, then I know his eyeballs are going to be red and smoking by the end, and I'm like, you son of a bitch, you know, what's he up to?
Well, not only Crowley, but Mark Shepherd, who has steadfastly maintained at many conventions that, oh, you've never seen Crowley's eyes turn.
Yeah, I know. He was so pissed when Funko released the red-eyed Crowley.
And I still wonder whether that was just a weird coincidence.
I don't know. I think it was a weird coincidence. Yeah, me too. But you know, I mean, most seasons I can kind of go, and then there was that episode and this episode. I was kind of like, meh, about, you know, like, not that I ever dislike any, but there's always some that I kind of can, you know, pretty much surf over.
It's in your top 20.
Yeah. But I can't say that about season 10. I freaking loved every episode. And when I went back and rewatched it, I was like, oh, man, Ask Jeeves. I love Ask Jeeves. You know, that was so funny. And I really enjoyed Girls, Girls, Girls. Another thing I really enjoyed was all the interactions with Cole. I really had forgotten. I liked that character a lot. And then about the boy was so, you know, I really enjoyed it. Well, I thought it was a really super strong season.
Yes. You know, one thing I always love looking at the sort of the season structure, and that we really, you know, we start with Demon Dean and we really end with,
pretty much,
you know, human version Demon Dean, if you like. So it's top and tailed with, you know, some evil form of Dean and that, you know, and then in between, as you said, you have, you know, the brothers sort of together, but then, you have really Sam starts out desperate to save Dean and ends up again desperate to save Dean
and doing anything.
It's still, the funny thing is, it still shocks me to watch the first few episodes and see Jared with his arm in a sling.
I know, like, and you know what?
I keep forgetting it. It's like every time I watch those, I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I've forgotten that.
It's so disconcerting, and he's skinny. He looks really skinny in those, you know, like he was obvious, you know, poor bugger. But, yeah, I'm the same. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Every time I see it, it's like really takes me a minute to, you know, regain my equilibrium watching the episodes. But
somewhere in my head, I sort of blank it out. And then so when I see it on screen, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Forgot all about that. Yeah.
I really liked the arc with Cass and Hannah.
So did I.
And I would have, like, and, you know, again, as with any good story, I was sad to see her go in a way, because I think she'd highlighted a lot about Cass, including how, you know, how connected he's become with humanity and how much, you know, particularly Dean, obviously, have shaped who he is. And in a way, she was a reminder of how far Cass has come from the Cass we first met in season 4. And I thought Erica's you know, portrayal was wonderful. And, you know, I hope, even though she's in a different vessel now, you know, I think it's great to have another Angel character that, you know, aside from Metatron, that we may have, you know, on the inside in heaven to and, know what's going on there. Yeah,
and when Hannah did actually go into that other vessel, I thought that guy did an amazing job.
It was great.
How great was that? He went from this whatever, this like straight angel to you know, that sort of straight up and down black and white angel to Hannah, and so he totally became Hannah. I was like, that guy's great. They should keep him.
Of course, we had some, as we mentioned, Curtis Armstrong, we had some delicious Metatron. Mm-hmm. Not as much as I would have liked, because, you know, I always like more Metatron. But, you know, particularly we mentioned Hunter Games, where there's a big confrontation between between Dean and, and first Sam and then Dean and Metatron, which were just incredibly and intense scenes. Who can forget Demon Dean chasing Sam with the hammer?
Because he wants to nail him. That might have been my favourite bit.
And, of course, we had the return of Sheriff Donna in Hibbing 911 with Jody, which, you know, cemented both Donna's character and Brianna as fan favourites. I'm saying that, and if you don't think she's not your favourite, then you're wrong.
No, they're fabulous. Fabulous together, great teaming. Both great characters on their own and work super well together. I'm so glad they're both still alive and out there so that we can enjoy them again.
Yeah, I think, you know, and have that ability to bring, you know, very much what is, I think, is a hallmark of Supernatural is, you know, in the midst of a, you know, what can be a really serious story, but bring their own humour to it. And I think particularly the relationship between Jody and Donna, and seeing that evolve was just delicious.
Yeah.
Just absolutely delicious.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, that was great. I really enjoyed that too. And then, of course, we also had Claire as well throughout the season and watching how that changed Cass in so many ways, you know, to who he was. I mean, he was to watching him drive away and saying, you know, somebody tell me she's going to be okay. I mean, it was just like the least angelic angel, you know, the most human of Cass. And I love Sam going, yeah, she's going to be okay. Cass will be fine. I went, oh, Jesus, Sam. Put a little effort into it. But
it was also one of the, again, a deleted scene was when there's an exchange between Rowena and Cass. And, you know, at one point he says, you know, there was nothing better than seeing her smile. And again, we get, you know, that was the scene I was really sad was cut because I really thought it gave a, you know, a real insight into the impact that she'd had on Cass and that connection, which even though it's weird and he killed her father sort of and fact that was something that moved him so much. And we know that, you know, how they left it, that, you know, they had a connection. They had a grumpy cat connection.
Oh,
I do hope we, you know, we see her return and I would love to see more of that relationship with Cass, because I think, It followed on from the stuff with Hannah and emphasising, you know, his humanity in that way. Mm. And, you know, of course, he'd had a hard season because he was dying half
he'd
the
had
time.
A hard season. And, you know, another scene that I was, like, super sad that they cut, the scene where Sam's mopping up the blood
around
the bonfire of stuff in the bunker after Dean's shot killed everybody and beaten the crap out of Cass. And that's when he's on the floor on his hands and knees mopping up the blood from the kid or whatever. And he finds the photos that then he gave to Dean at the end to remember he was human and, you know, that he loved at one point. And I really, you know, it wasn't so much the finding of the photos or anything, but that scene of him mopping up the floor, I was like, yes, they must have to do this shit all the time, man. There was just like a, you know, like a something just so real about yes. him doing that and that being a part of their life and thinking yeah. about all the times that they would have to mop up the blood and yeah. clean up after themselves with all the, you know, dead bodies that they leave in their wake. Just seeing Sam do that, there was such a realness to that scene and something I kind of almost wish we saw more of, you know, that really mundane part of being a hunter.
One of my favourite DVD commentaries ever from the end, and I think it's Bob Singer who's, you know, it's Kripke and Ben Edlin.
Kripke and Edlin and Singer trying to keep them under control.
Yeah, and talking at the end about, you know, the mess they leave behind and who, you know, and it's like, well, you know, there could be a whole spin-off show about the cleanup crew. Which, of course, is happening in the Marvel Universe.
Read about that, yeah.
About the crew that has to come in and clean up after...
The Avengers break everything.
And, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have been through and wreaked havoc. So, but it was a lovely moment. And it did, of course, have the through line of the photos that he then has later on in the finale to give Dean.
Mm-hmm. I really love that scene. I was like, oh man, God, they must have to do that a lot. That's just horrible.
And hard work too.
And hard work, like yuck. But and you should have been wearing overalls or something. Anyway, yeah. So, and I think if sort of like I guess my top eps for the season, if I had to pick, if you're making me. Which you're what? Not. That was my suggestion. I really loved Rackenbach. I just every time I watch that, yeah. I absolutely freaking love it. I love where Dean is in that. I love where he starts and then where he gets to. And I love the confrontation with Cole. I just think Jensen in it is just like, wow. He's just like, and he looks like he's having the best time ever. I really love. I just love it.
Well, and that confrontation with Sam too. I think
So tight.
Yeah, is
so upset, and he's just so cold, yeah. and you know, like making fun of his puppy dog eyes, and I'm gonna take you home. You know, and it's just like it's beautiful. It's really, yeah. really tight. It's a beautifully written episode. That's Andrew Dabb, I think, wasn't it? And it's And it's just everybody's on absolute their A game in that episode. I love it. And Executioner's Song, which we talked about before, I think is wonderful from woe to go, from the beautiful teaser to the moments between Sam and Dean when Dean's saying he's scared, you know, and then facing off that, you know, the fabulous face off with Kane, which is amazing. Or this, and the scene with Cass facing off against Kane in the graveyard is wonderful. It's beautiful.
The visuals throughout that episode, you know, we talked about the
stunning.
Prison.
Stunning.
Kane standing in the middle of all those graves. And
stunning.
Is just,
and then the end with Dean dropping into Sam, and you know, just the whole thing, and even just, you know, the tricking of Crowley, and you know, that really was, I guess, the turning point for Crowley, realizing that squirrel had gone. His squirrel had gone. And I really love Ask Jeeves. Every time I watch that, I laugh my ass off. That cast was fantastic.
They were funny.
They were super, super funny. About a boy, adorable, you know, super cute episode. I don't know. They're probably my favourite. Definitely Rackenbach, I would say, and Executioner's Song, and also Brother's Keeper. I thought the finale was absolutely brilliant. And it was hilarious because it's like the first finale for a really long time where at the end I was like, woohoo, I'm happy. I'm like, this is really stupid. They're in a car getting surrounded by darkness. But for some reason, this feels like a happy ending. In our world, that was a happy ending. Oh my God. But it was such a good episode, and just the scene between Sam and Dean at the end, and you know, the scenes with death, and yeah, really, really spectacular.
I'll go with some individual scenes, although I'll have to go with probably all of fan fiction.
Yeah.
Because that was just, there was,
I kind
just...
of put that one in a whole different barrel.
Yeah, it's a
Do
bit,
you know what I mean?
A bit, yeah, it's a bit so above everything. other scenes I loved, end of Book of the Damned when Charlie gets to meet Cass.
Oh, yeah. I love that whole scene.
And then when they sit down and they're sort of laughing and they're having pizza and...
Behind blue eyes.
Yeah. Yes.
Beautiful.
But, you know, Sam's worried, still worried Dean's not okay.
And then it cuts to that really fast bit in the song and you see what actually happened in the scene from the different camera angles. Yep. I thought that was so good.
Yeah. Executioner's song, I love... this is weird in a way, but the scene at the end after Kane's been killed and you've got Crowley and Cass and Sam, it's one of those moments where, and particularly given the interaction Dean's just had with Kane, it's like Dean at the centre of everything, like how everyone is so focused on Dean in that moment. You know, and he falls into Sam's arm and, you know, he screws over Crowley, which pisses Crowley off because, you know, the romance is dead. He gives the first blade to Cass because he trusts Cass to look after it and to take it away from him, and all that. And, you know, and even Kane, the fact that everyone, like, you know, everybody loves Dean.
Yeah, all about Dean.
But it's just that thing that, and almost that, the intensity of that is, I particularly loved that. Really love the Werther Project.
I really love that one too. Then the opening of that is absolutely beautiful. It's so spot on for the period. Yeah. You know, everybody in their 70s garb, and it's just really amazing little opening teaser before we get to the boys.
Yes, and I think the from memory it was around that time that maybe it was, I don't know if it was the first or the second Always Keep Fighting shirt. I think it was, they were filming the episode when they launched the first campaign.
Yeah.
Which was sort of, you know, ironic given that it's about people killing
themselves.
And I thought it was, you know, again, an excellently written episode. I love the finale as well. Every interaction between Rowena and Sam I adored. Rowena and just about everyone, but I think there was something about how angry they were with each other all the time, and you've got this tiny, tiny, wee little Scottish girl, and you've got this huge hulking guy, and they were so matched.
Yeah, absolutely. They didn't feel like there was any, you know, disparity in their size at all.
It's just a juxtaposition of that, and it just worked so really brilliantly. Finally, I will never forgive them for killing Charlie. So there's that. I will move on about 3 centuries after I move on from the casual female viewer thing. But I will focus on the wonderfulness of Ruth as Rowena, because I think she was a real, and again, in classic Supernatural style, someone who was brought on for a couple of episodes and just was so amazing that that they kept her.
Yep,
she's back.
She's amazing. Yeah, she became such a treat to watch. You know, she's just as that character developed, and very much like her son, a complete trickster. You know, keeping everything. You know, you're thinking she's chained, and you're thinking she's doing this, and she just boink, she can break all the chains and do whatever she wants. All she wanted was that codex, and she's got it now, and she can do whatever she wants. And I thought, oh my God, they're so like each other.
And we have to, of course, give a shout-out, because it was her storyline that brought us Olivette the Hamster, which brought us the wonderfulness of the Comic-Con panel with Richard and Rob and the Hamster.
That Hamster's great.
See my pants.
Even at the end when the lad, the immortal boy, even when he says, how do you know all this, and Crowley goes, a hamster told me.
Oscar.
That was beautiful.
Yes. And one other thing that I nearly forgot was the surly bobbies.
Oh yeah, the bobbies are surly.
Up in getting to see Bobby again, up in heaven, and yes, the Bobbies are surly.
That was nice. Awesome. that was pretty funny. I also liked that the door to heaven was number 42. I like that a lot. Yeah. I was like, thank you.
Very clever.
Yeah, very clever.
And that actually has, you know, I thought one of my, Crowley and Dean having a drink in the bar, and I did love their bar scenes, but, you know, Dean again has that line to Crowley that a wise man once told me, family don't end with blood, but it doesn't start there either. And I think, you know, family cares about you, not what you can do for them. And, you know, again, crystallizing, you know, the through line of this whole show, just beautifully. And I note that was Andrew Dabb, and I think my other favorite line of the season. Let me just check on Mr. Dabb as well. Let me just check. It was in The Prisoner where just before. Well, while Dean's beating the crap out of him and Cass says to him, you know, it might take you hundreds of years to give in to the mark, but I'm the one who'll have to watch you murder the world.
Yeah.
And I just adore that.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Poetry, I'm going to have to watch you murder the world, is just beautiful writing. And
yeah, it was.
We love you, Andrew Dabb.
Yes, we do. He's a beautiful writer. I hope he writes lots for season 11.
So, on to season 11 then.
Woohoo! Oh my God, I can't believe it's only like a couple of days away. I'm so excited.
I know.
I'm so excited. Oh my gosh.
So, we left the boys in the car engulfed in the darkness.
Clouds of doom.
Dean having been relieved of the mark, having killed Death. Rowena has run off with the Book of the Damned and put an attack dog spell on Cast in order to kill Crowley, who's trapped in a, we think maybe trapped in a devil's trap. What's going to happen next?
Well, I'm pretty sure Crowley's going to be okay.
No, he's dead. Mark Shepherd's told me 40 million times.
Oh my gosh, I know. Shush, Mark. What's going to happen next? Well, I mean, so we're going spoiler city. Well, I know
yeah,
that...
Yeah, we're going spoiler city, everyone.
Okay, so tune out if you don't want to play with the spoilers. I mean, we know that Jensen said that we pick up exactly where we left off with the boys, and it looks to me like we do with Crowley and Cass as well, and that... we see them after the darkness, but we don't know how long they were in the darkness or what exactly happened in the darkness. But we basically pick up from where we left off, which will be... Yes. I love it when we do that. And, I mean, I think we can tell from some of the trailers or whatever, I can't even think, that we pick up... Looks like we pick up exactly where we left off with Crowley and Cass as well, with Cass attacking Crowley. And how he gets out of that, I don't know, though. But he does. With some demon lackeys on the side.
Well, we're assuming that given we saw more of Crowley's power, extent of his powers maybe. Last season, that maybe he can just break out of the demon devil's trap and piss off.
Yeah. And we know that Cast is going to be afflicted with the attack dog spell for a little while.
Possibly, yes, it appears from the spoilers, and that he gets captured, I'm assuming by angels, but who knows?
Oh, angels or demons, I'm not really sure which. Maybe angels. Can't really tell, really. They all wear suits.
We need some leisure wear.
Demons should be in velour leisure wear, and then the angels can be in the nerdy suits. I think I like that. what else have we got? We know that Rowena's going to be back.
We know she's back. She's stronger than we ever suspected, and she's got the Book of the Damned.
Yep. What else do we know? We know that...
Well, we don't know what the darkness is.
No.
Or what wants. That's what everyone's going to be trying to find out. But we do know
that it's going to manifest in a female form.
Or part of it is. I mean, it's unclear, but there is a human representation
of
something to do with the darkness.
Yeah. And she looks hot.
the darkness, or who knows.
Yeah.
And I believe, I'm just looking over my notes from Comic-Con interviews, was that it's going to have unfinished business with the forces that put it away, which, of course, were
God.
God and...
But it even predates, it predates the angels, doesn't it?
Yes, but they were the ones who locked it up.
Okay.
Yeah, it was God and the
archangels. And the archangels.
Who locked it up.
Mm. Have we got any archangels left?
Yeah,
well, possibly let out. We don't know if he's really dead.
Well, there's, you know, who knows?
Oh, yeah, well, there's a couple in a cage somewhere. Boom, ba-dum, boom. We know that there's some flashbacks.
We know that we're going to see Crowley as we've never seen him before, which we know from the spoilers is dressed as a priest.
Yes. So we know we're going to see Sam shirtless.
Yes, possibly in a flashback, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a flashback because he has the tat and we know that he doesn't have that anymore because he's Sam fucking Winchester.
I do think we need a Sam getting re-tattooed.
Me too. I think we need that.
Definitely. There's been a lot of talk about the boys, about Sam and Dean being on the same page, about working together. I think it's obviously, I mean, it's inevitable they'll have conflict about something.
They always have.
We know that in his starting to research the darkness, Sam's going to have visions of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jensen said that it's what's happening to Sam is not necessarily bad or evil.
Yes. And that there is either, whether he thinks they're from God, he certainly tries to contact God, as we know from the trailers. So there's certainly, there's something going on there. Someone's trying to, someone or something. I have to say there's been, I mean, there often is, but there's very little detail about where the myth arc's going and what the effect of the darkness is going to be on the world at large. I mean, the trailers we've seen show a lot of dead people, but whether that's sort of an immediate thing
And the black veins that are everywhere and which, you know, may or may not be darkness related.
Yes.
It might be something that came with the darkness. I mean, who knows what happens when the darkness is released?
Who knows?
Who knows?
What are some other phrases that they've used that I think you can't escape your past? I think that might have been something Jeremy Carver said, but that the boys are not going to be, certainly Dean's not going to be guilty over letting the darkness out. It's going to be very much, well, you know, we have to deal with this. What are we going to do now?
Yeah, he's kind of letting that guilt thing go, and he's not going to be the guilt-ridden, downtrodden Dean that he has been over the last few seasons. He's going to be much more back to his kick-ass, you know, cheeky Dean.
And
at least initially. Who knows what will happen down the track?
5 minutes. there is also a question around, you know, given that he had the mark, is there a connection between him and the darkness?
Yep.
Will there be, you know, some effect of, you know, on him?
And, of course, we've also got the question, and which I believe there's going to be some something about, is what happens when death dies?
Yes. Yes.
And that is going to, they're going to, we're going to, sorry if everybody can hear my dog just rambling through my room then, but killing.
Hi, Buffy.
She's killing the zebra. But yeah, we're going to see the ramifications of there being no death or of death being killed. Apparently. Is another thing that we've heard.
Yes.
What else has there been? Anything? There's a car wash scene.
Probably there's two episodes, other than that, we know the first two episodes are sort of myth arc focused.
And Jeremy said to see it as one. He said really basically, I don't know that it's going to be a to be continued, but it is basically the one story across the two episode arcs. It's got the same guest cast in it. And so, you know, it's, which I think is really exciting that they're kind of giving a good couple of episodes to set up the where we're going to go, you know, initially with the season.
Which was a bit similar last season as well.
I mean, we had like a few.
Yeah, and I believe there's, I think it's in addition to this opener, another two-parter within the season that really is a two-part, like a real two-part episode that's set around the same case, and it's, it's a two-parter. We've heard quite a bit about Baby, episode 4, written by Robbie Thompson, which centres around the Impala, possibly involving the car wash scene. A lot of different interpretations on how it's actually going to be portrayed and what it's going to be like. So I think we're still going to be surprised over exactly what the Baby episode is.
But there was the spoiler from New Jersey Con that there is a scene in it where the boys are going to sleep in the Impala. Dean on the front seat and Sam on the back seat, and they're having a talk about the past.
Yes.
And
which might be where the flashbacks come into it.
It might be where the flashbacks come into it. And it sounds super wonderful because, like, you often think about that, and both the boys have said it's the moments in the Impala when we normally cut away. Yeah. So instead of cutting away and then seeing them walk up into the motel, we're actually going to stick with them in the car.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll get to see those conversations or not conversations. You know, I think in the extended trailer that the show released, the 2-minute trailer that the show released, there's a shot from below with them both eating in the Impala, and you know, that looked to me like it's going to be from Baby, and I'm assuming that the camera is just going to be set all up in Baby, and you know, it all takes place in the car.
Yeah,
even a fight with three people in the back seat.
Yes, it sounds extraordinary.
Oh, sounds amazing.
Cannot wait for that episode.
They must have taken that car apart in all different ways and they had before to be able to do it.
And then episode 8, which Richard Spates directing and was written by Jenny Klein, which is about Sam's imaginary friend from his childhood. So that sounds particularly wonderful as well.
It does. It sounds
and,
great.
And you alluded then to or referred then to the so promos are usually made by the CW, but we had one made by Supernatural people in post-production with the song "Oh Death" that was released. Was it late last week? And obviously, everyone got the email at once because we had just about the whole cast tweeting out within a 2-minute period.
Everybody tweeted it out. It was like boom. I was like, well, my whole timeline was full of the cast and crew tweeting out the trailer.
And did you want to talk a bit about how wonderful it was, just because as someone who makes promos, I think you had some really good insights into that.
Well, it was like, I thought it was a really wonderful piece. It's a great piece of music that we're all familiar with anyway. So it's wonderful that the show has returned to using that. But what I said about it was it's unusual, and certainly it's not the... I actually think the 1-minute spot that the CW released for the show this year was really kind of a nice promo, but they have a very different style. And to be honest, they're doing different things anyway. They're selling the show, but also their network. They've got a network tone and everything. Yeah. You know, it's a whole different thing when you're working for a network. There's a whole lot of branding that you have to get into it. And of course, the show just put together a piece that represented the show.
It was basically an official fan vid.
It's
a fan vid made by people who work on the show.
Yeah, it represented the show without having to do anything else. It didn't have to have any kind of tune in messaging or branding or anything like that. And so it was cut so beautifully. And what I said about it was that what you often don't get in promos, and even in trailers, you don't get it anywhere near enough, is getting these shots that are just there for. It's a little bit longer than you think they're going to be. And so everything's got just that little bit more time to breathe. And I feel like when you have those shots that just, they just linger, you think they're going to cut away and then they just linger a couple of beats longer than you think they're going to and drift out before we cut to the next one. And it was still beautifully cut to music, but instead of going beat, 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 it was, you know, like had this really beautiful slow pace. It gives you I find that it creates a much more exciting and emotional piece when they cut it like that. And so, and the other thing that I really loved about it, and this is like never hardly ever happens, is that the only sound ups from the show it had was the couple of grabs, and there was like maybe three in it, and baby top and tail, and everything else was silent.
Yep.
And it was worked so well, and hardly anybody does that, because you've got to have the kapows and wows. And, you know, I mean, I know that from my work. If I did that, everybody would go, oh, you need the sound from the show, and I'd have to put it all back in. But that worked really, really beautiful. So I thought it was a, like you say, I mean, essentially it was a sanctioned fan vid from the show itself. But it was a beautifully put together piece that was exciting because it had a lot of stuff we hadn't seen before. It was a great track, and you know, the way they constructed it worked beautifully.
It was an homage rather than a piece of marketing.
Yeah, it wasn't a piece of
and
marketing.
Not that marketing can't be, you know, beautiful and entertaining and all those things, but this didn't have that burden. So
no,
it could
exactly.
just be like a fan vid, which is this is. And they just happen to have footage we don't have.
Yeah.
We love this show. Look at this.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't have the, as you said, it didn't have the need to have the marketing messages or, you know, any of that kind of stuff in it. So it was allowed to really just represent just the show, which, you know, when you're making a promo, that's not necessarily what you're actually always doing. So, I thought it was great. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I watched it, a dozen times probably in a row. And every time I watched it, I was like, oh, this is just a nicely cut piece. So whoever did the edit on it did a really nice job. And the shot selections and just everything was beautiful. And whoever chose not to bring the audio up in the piece, good job. Ballsy and good.
Yes, no, it was very, very wonderful.
I was so excited.
And a lovely treat for us.
It was such a nice treat, and everybody was so excited. It's like, here's your surprise promo, woo!
And here's your surprise promo from everyone who's ever worked on the show who has Twitter. I expected Jeremy and Bob to pop up on Twitter just especially so they could tweet it.
Everyone was very excited, and it was on Vimeo and it was on YouTube, so they were making sure everybody could see it, which I thought was great as well.
Yes.
Created their very own little channel for it on Vimeo and YouTube.
So I'm sure there's a story behind the scenes of because that's an unusual thing to do. They're going they're going outside the system in doing something like that. So
you know what? That's a completely unusual thing to do. I've never known a show to do it.
No.
And you know what? Any show that normally, if a show do promos, you see sometimes the in-show promos that they're produced by the show.
Yes.
They're never any good. They're never as good as what the network would produce for the show ever. But this was great.
Yeah.
And you know, like, I'd love to know how long they spent on it. But yeah, it was it was great. Anyway.
Well, that was like one thing that unfortunately wasn't on the DVD, and it's unfortunate it wasn't, but they showed at Comic-Con was a reel, again done by post-production people, so basically the same people who probably did that promo, and it was a homage to 10 years of Supernatural.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Included images from every single episode.
Oh, that would have been great to have on the DVD.
Now, I imagine the issue would have been getting clearances because it covered it, like, 200 and something episodes, and there would have been guest actors. Who knows? I don't know what the
there would issues have been
would have
something.
Been. But and maybe we'll see it at some point in the future. But it was real. It was, and I can't remember that it was a Nine Inch Nails song, I think, which I can't remember off the top of my name of it off the top of my head. But they'd actually, this is how much they love the show. They'd actually been collecting these clips all along.
Oh, that's cool.
So they didn't sit down.
And you know what? Smart.
Yeah, and they actually...
That's real smart.
Yeah, collecting favourite scenes and little bits in a folder somewhere on the desktop.
It would be probably in the hold section on the Avid, but that's okay. Or on a drive.
Did they have Avid when they started?
No, they wouldn't have, because they would have been doing it on film, so yes. They would have had to have...
there you go.
I wonder where they would have... But still, all that stuff would have probably been re-digitally...
Ripped it off their own DVDs.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
So, and one other thing, just reminded me, talking about post-production and things, one of my thrills always coming up to the new season is new title card.
Oh, yeah. Woo! I saw someone saying, oh, so the title card is a circling flame, and what that means is blah, 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 and I was like, oh, no, that's just the CW end frame. That's not the title.
Which, if you remember,
and they went into a huge sort of thing about what they. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I don't want to tell them. I'll let them just roll with that.
Because they did a similar thing last year. I can't remember what it was now. And but they did a similar thing that everyone was like, oh, is that going to be the title card? And it's no, you don't see the title card until the episode ends.
Exciting. And how nerdy are we all? We're so awesomely nerdy that we get so excited about the title card.
And do you know this will be the 25th different title card that has been on the show?
That's amazing.
Because they often have one or two special ones in season ones that they do. So, yep. They've had 24 so far.
I wonder if they'll do a special one for Baby.
Maybe.
It's a pretty special app.
Who knows? But it's always, because it's the one thing, given we don't have a theme song each week, it's the one thing we see every week is that title card, and it has to encapsulate, you know, the themes of the season and the mood. Do you have a favourite title card?
Oh, God. You know what? I really love the season 4 ones with the beating angel wings. Yeah. I've always really loved that one. I think that's probably my favourite. I even love the music for that one and the noises that go along with it.
Flapping
noise. When I first saw it, I had no idea it was going to be angel wings. I was like, oh, what are they, like crows or something? You know, like, because you just had no clue. But I think probably that one's my favourite, I would have to say. I really like that one. What about you?
Look, that would be up there. I did, for entirely selfish reasons, I did love the blood in season 5 because... Just before season 5 launched, we rebranded the wiki. So we used to be very similar to Wikipedia, white background. And the sort of logo we had was that tree that Sam drew in Home, you know, the tree that's outside their house. That was sort of our logo because, you know, the wiki was sort of inspired by John's journal and stuff. Anyway, we rebranded and our logo became the bloody handprint. And so we just launched it all in red and black, and then the title comes out with all this blood on it. And so that was like, oh, yes, that's good. I do like the Shattering Glass season 6. I think by the end of the season that felt really, really like appropriate. But then I loved the goo in season 7.
I loved the goo, and I loved the cake in season 7 that exploded into goo.
Yes.
That was fun.
Time for a Wedding one. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of those in season ones, the X-Files one in season 6 was... Yeah. For Clap Your Hands If You Believe,
Frontierland,
with the burning map, Monster Movie with the old sort of black.
Monster Movie is like some of my favorite. Oh, I love that episode; it's one of my all-time favorites. Those opening titles for the Monster Movie is great. And can I just say the bit that I love about the most is the music turns out to be on their radio and they turn it off. I love that. The Ghost Faces. Yeah, that's a great opener.
And, of course, Changing Channels. There's a lot of wonderful ones.
Jane, I watched that the other night.
and
I always giggle.
Plucky Penny Whistles with the glitter.
Oh, yeah. I love the end of that episode. With the giant slinky.
So many amazing ones.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what we get. Oh, gosh, I just can't wait. I can't wait for this episode. I wish it was like 2 hours. I wish they gave us like a 2-hour season. Wouldn't that be awesome? this 43 minutes business is not going to cut it.
Oh, I know.
After like 5 months. It's like, I wish it was longer. I wonder if anybody's going to tweet along.
I don't know. We haven't heard yet. I suppose it might depend what they're filming too. Who? I mean, I'm sure
who's around?
Someone will, whether Jared Jensen, Misha, or Mark are available to tweet. Yes, may purely depend on their
schedule.
On their schedule, because the camera stops for no one.
Nope, that's right. If one of them is finished.
Yes, so it'd be always wonderful if they do. So here's hoping.
Fingers crossed.
So there we go. I love this point. I feel like I'm on the edge of a bridge about to jump off on a bungee rope because we don't know what's coming.
No, I know. I love it. I'm really excited. And I feel a little bit more excited, I think, than even normal, because I feel like we're joining, like, everybody's like themselves for a change. There's no demons or, you know, possessed, half dead, broken brained, you know, whatever people. They seem to be pretty much whole at the moment anyway, and it'll be interesting to join them all, except for Cass. Cass is a little busted. There always has to be one.
Who knows what's up with Crowley?
No, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, kind of not going in with, like, people missing, or, you know, we're going in and I mean, from
at least all on the same planet.
They're all on the same plane.
Everyone's in their own body.
Yeah, everyone's in their own body, and they're like, the demon appears to be a demon, the angel appears to be a human, the humans appear to be humans. And it also looks like from the synopses that we get like the four lead cast in the opening episode, which is really cool as well.
So everyone on board, we're on board,
and I'm interested to see at what point Dean changes out of the murder shirt, because like in all in the promo pics for episode 1 and 2, he's still in the murder shirt.
Murder shirt's caught on. I noticed a number of people go, "He's still in the murder shirt."
It's like he's starting to get smelly.
Not as sexy as Robbie Thompson's murder shirt.
I think Dean smells like rainbows anyway, so.
Yeah, not no, after a week.
I know, it's like, when is he going to change? Don't they have some clothes in the boot? Come on, man. I know, it cracks me up. I'm like, oh my God, second episode, he's still wearing the murder shirt.
How long will he wear it for? And will he murder anyone?
I love that there's
lost its mojo.
I hope not. And I love that in the screen caps from the first episode, Dean's got the grenade launcher in his hands.
Yes. Will he finally get to use the grenade launcher?
Jensen will be so pleased if he does.
I'm a bit concerned, though, because having sat there for at least 10 years without being used, as far as we know, not sure that you can rely on it. I don't want it backfiring on him.
Oh, my gosh. I reckon that shot's just a tease. Anyway. Yeah, so very exciting.
It's very, very exciting, mm-hmm. And we'll be back. I don't know whether we'll be back after the first episode or the second episode, maybe if it's a two-parter. You're down here in Melbourne, Amy. We might have to get drunk and podcast together.
Shut the gate. We never do that. Let's do it.
Friday night?
Yes.
Let's do it.
All right. It's a date.
Mayhem.
It could be mayhem. But that sounds awesome. We should definitely do that. Okay, so maybe we should do it as a two-parter. We should tell people right now.
Okay, we're going to do it as a two-parter, so don't look for us after the first episode. We'll wait for the first two to be over, and then we will come at you live and in the same room.
Well, oh, my God.
Recorded, with drinks. I will come up with a special cocktail.
Woohoo!
I've been Jules from the Super Wiki.
And I've been Amy from Sweet on Dean. And enjoy the premiere episode, guys. It's going to be great. Have fun.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is WOLSPN@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.